Chapter 5. Independence. You carry, apostrophe says the stranger, this jealousy and distrust into every transaction of public life. By repelling worthy men from your legislative assemblies, it has bred up a class of candidates for the suffrage, who, in their every act, disgrace your institutions and your people's choice. It has rendered you so fickle, and so given to change, that your inconstancy has passed into a proverb. For you no sooner set up an idol firmly, than you are sure to pull it down, and dash it into fragments. And this, because directly you reward a benefactor, or a public servant, you distrust him, merely because he is rewarded. And immediately apply yourselves to find out, either that you have been too bountiful in your acknowledgments, or you're amiss in his deserts. Any man who attains a high place among you, from the president downwards, may date his downfall from that moment. For any printed lie that any notorious villain pens, although it militate directly against the character and conduct of a life, appeals at once to your distrust, and is believed. You will strain at a gnat in the way of trustfulness and confidence, however fairly won and well deserved. But you will swallow a whole caravan of camels, if they be laden with unworthy doubts and mean suspicions. Is this well, think you, or likely to elevate the character of the governors or the governed, among you? ... The answer is invariably the same. There's freedom of opinion here, you know. Every man thinks for himself, and we are not to be easily overreached. That's how our people come to be suspicious. ... Another prominent feature is the love of smart dealing, which gilds over many a swindle and gross breach of trust, many a defalcation, public and private, and enables many a knave to hold his head up with the best, who well deserves a halter, though it has not been without its retributive operation, for this smartness has done more in a few years to impair the public credit, and to cripple the public resources, than dull honesty, however rash, could have effected in a century. The merits of a broken speculation, or a bankruptcy, or of a successful scoundrel, are not gauged by its or his observance of the golden rule, do as you would be done by, but are considered with reference to their smartness. I recollect, on both occasions of our passing, that ill-fated Cairo on the Mississippi, remarking on the bad effects such gross deceits must have when they exploded, in generating a want of confidence abroad, and discouraging foreign investment. But I was given to understand, that this was a very smart scheme by which a deal of money had been made, and that its smartest feature was, that they forgot these things abroad, in a very short time, and speculated again, as freely as ever. The following dialogue I have held 100 times. Is it not a very disgraceful circumstance that such a man as so-and-so should be acquiring a large property by the most infamous and odious means, and notwithstanding all the crimes of which he has been guilty, should be tolerated and abetted by your citizens? He is a public nuisance, is he not? ... Yes, sir. ... A convicted liar? ... Yes, sir. ... He has been kicked, and cuffed, and caned? ... Yes, sir. ... And he is utterly dishonorable, debased, and profligate? ... Yes, sir. ... In the name of wonder, then, what is his merit? ... Well, sir, he is a smart man. ... But the foul growth of America has a more tangled root than this, and it strikes its fibers, deep in its licentious press. Schools may be erected, east, west, north, and south, pupils be taught, and masters reared, by scores upon scores of thousands. Colleges may thrive, churches may be crammed, temperance may be diffused, and advancing knowledge in all other forms walk through the land with giant strides. But while the newspaper press of America is in, or near, its present abject state, high moral improvement in that country is hopeless. Year by year, it must and will go back. Year by year, the tone of public opinion must sink lower down. Year by year, the Congress and the Senate must become of less account before all decent men. And year by year, the memory of the great fathers of the Revolution must be outraged more and more, in the bad life of their degenerate child. Among the herd of journals which are published in the States, there are some, the reader scarcely need be told, of character and credit. From personal intercourse with accomplished gentlemen connected with publications of this class, I have derived both pleasure and profit. But the name of these is few, and of the others legion, and the influence of the good is powerless to counteract the moral poison of the bad. Among the gentry of America, among the well-informed and moderate, in the learned professions, at the bar, and on the bench, there is, as there can be, but one opinion, in reference to the vicious character of these infamous journals. It is sometimes contended, I will not say strangely, for it is natural to seek excuses for such a disgrace, that their influence is not so great as a visitor would suppose. I must be pardoned for saying that there is no warrant for this plea, and that every fact and circumstance tends directly to the opposite conclusion. When any man, of any grade of desert in intellect or character, can climb to any public distinction, no matter what, in America, without first groveling down upon the earth, and bending the knee before this monster of depravity, when any private excellence is safe from its attacks, when any social confidence is left unbroken by it, or any tie of social decency and honor is held in the least regard, when any man in that free country has freedom of opinion, and presumes to think for himself, and speak for himself, without humble reference to a censorship which, for its rampant ignorance and base dishonesty, he utterly loathes, and despises in his heart, when those who most acutely feel its infamy, and the reproach it casts upon the nation, and who most denounce it to each other, dare to set their heels upon, and crush it openly, in the sight of all men, then, I will believe, that its influence is lessening, and men are returning to their manly senses. But while that press has its evil eye in every house, and its black hand in every appointment in the state, from a president to a postman, while, with ribald slander for its only stock in trade, it is the standard literature of an enormous class, who must find their reading in a newspaper, or they will not read at all, so long must its odium be upon the country's head, and so long must the evil it works be plainly visible in the Republic. The foregoing was written in the year 1842. It rests with the reader to decide whether it has received any confirmation, or assumed any color of truth, in or about the year 1862. An enlightened clergyman, at various places in Suffolk as elsewhere, penny readings take place for the instruction and amusement of the lower classes. There is a little town in Suffolk called Eye, where the subject of one of these readings was a tale by Mr. Wilkie Collins, from the last Christmas number of this journal, entitled Picking Up Waifs at Sea. It appears that the Eye gentility was shocked by the introduction of this rude piece among the taste and musical glasses of that important town, on which the eyes of Europe are notoriously always fixed. In particular, the feelings of the vicar's family were outraged, and a local organ say that the Lesnival Bleater consequently doomed the said piece to everlasting oblivion, as being of an injurious tendency. When this fearful fact came to the knowledge of the unhappy writer of the doomed tale in question, he covered his face with his robe, previous to dying decently under the sharp steel of the ecclesiastical gentility of the terrible town of Eye. But the discovery that he was not alone in his gloomy glory revived him, and he still lives. For, at Stowmarket, in the aforesaid county of Suffolk, at another of those penny readings, it was announced that a certain juvenile sketch, culled from a volume of sketches by Boz, and entitled The Bloomsbury Christening, would be read. Hereupon, the clergyman of that place took heart and pen, and addressed the following terrific epistle to a gentleman bearing the very appropriate name of Gudgeon. Stowmarket Vicarage, February 25, 1861. Sir, my attention has been directed to a piece called the Bloomsbury Christening which you propose to read this evening. Without presuming to claim any interference in the arrangement of the readings, I would suggest to you whether you have on this occasion sufficiently considered the character of the composition you have selected. I quite appreciate the laudable motive of the promoters of the readings, to raise the moral tone amongst the working class of the town, and to direct this taste in a familiar and pleasant manner. The Bloomsbury christening cannot possibly do this. It trifles with a sacred ordinance, and the language and style, instead of improving the taste, has a direct tendency to lower it. I appeal to your right feeling, whether it is desirable to give publicity to that which must shock several of your audience, and create a smile amongst others, to be indulged in, only by violating the conscientious scruples of their neighbors. The ordinance which is here exposed to ridicule, is one which is much misunderstood, and neglected amongst many families belonging to the Church of England, and the mode in which it is treated in this Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.